World leaders call for a global treaty for pandemic preparedness and response after COVID-19. Live from London, this is the Marketplace Morning Report from the BBC World Service. I'm Victoria Craig. Good morning. More than 20 leaders have penned an article with the World Health Organization that's been published in newspapers across the world today. In it, they say coronavirus has posed the biggest challenge to the global community since World War II. The leaders, including those of South Korea, South Africa, and several European nations, argue that no one is safe until everyone is safe. They say countries must be better prepared in the future and must ensure universal and equitable access to vaccines, medicines, and diagnostics. Notably, neither the U.S. nor China are among the signatories today. The BBC's Imogen Folks explains what leaders hope this letter will ultimately accomplish.
It's full of wonderful aspirations, kinds of things we would all like to have after a year of in and out of lockdown. But how it would actually work is not quite clear. What they want is a pandemic treaty where everybody works together to prepare for a pandemic, probably to share vaccines and treatments as well when they come on stream. But agreeing to it and all the fine detail and whether it's binding, whether it's mandatory, who polices it, has all got to be decided by the World Health Organization member states. I think this is definitely a work in progress, great idea, but it's not something we're going to see signed and sealed today or next year even.
Why wait until the next pandemic? Because as we've seen, particularly across Europe for the last several months, there's been quite a bit of finger pointing about which countries are getting vaccine doses, talk of export controls. I mean, can some of this apply now?
I think what the World Health Organization would say is that the wealthier countries which have bought so many supplies of vaccines should start to be more generous. I think 10 countries have something like more than 90% of the vaccine doses. We have some countries which have received nothing at all. This is the lower income and developing countries. The WHO's point of view is that this is unfair and that there should have been, as the WHO said at the start, a global agreement to vaccinate the 20% of the world's population deemed to be vulnerable, the elderly, chronically ill, and health workers, 20% around the globe, rather than pushing up towards 60% in the United Kingdom, over that figure in Israel, and some people have zero.
Clearly a lot still for world leaders to think about then. The BBC's Imogen Folks in Geneva, thank you so much for your time this morning.
Thank you.
Well, as Imogen pointed out there, talk is one thing, action is another. Roger Connor, who heads up GlaxoSmithKline's Global Vaccines Unit, told the BBC today he welcomes the commitment from world leaders for better future cooperation.
We were not ready globally for this pandemic. We need to be better prepared for the next. So collaboration across governments, including companies, and working on where the gaps were, plugging the gaps quickly will be important, because it's not, will this ever happen again? You know, this will happen again. It's just going to be when, and we need to be better prepared.
Mr. Connor also said the main thing the pharmaceutical industry can take away from this pandemic is the need to not just have factory capacity to produce vaccines and other drugs, but to make sure such facilities can be ramped up quickly to meet supercharged global demand.
There was not the excess capacity able to cope with the need to create billions of doses. As the world's biggest vaccines manufacturer in GSK, we make hundreds of millions of doses in a typical year, and COVID-19 is going to require billions. So manufacturing capacity readiness will be a hot topic. You'll hear about keeping facilities warm, keeping factories cold, and saying, well, we'll pull the sheets off in the future whenever a pandemic happens, just doesn't work. These processes are complex. You need to keep them running. So you'll see, I think, a model where capacity will be built, but it will be run at a utilization of 30, 40% and able to sprint then when a pandemic happens. That's the gap that I saw that was missing this time around.
Well, there's a lot more of Mr. Connor's conversation with my colleague Sean Farrington, including a chat about GSK's efforts to help produce a vaccine with the potential to combat multiple COVID-19 variants. You can head to my Twitter, I'm @VictoriaCraig, to find a full link to that interview. Taking a look now at global financial markets, stock benchmarks in Europe are up as much as 0.6% this morning. Oil prices, meanwhile, have given up earlier gains. The international Brent crude benchmark is trading at just under $65 a barrel. That's as authorities at the Suez Canal say they hope to have the backlog of ships using the waterway cleared within 3.5 days. More than 400 vessels had lined up while the massive Ever Given container ship was stuck across the canal for nearly a week. From Suez, the BBC's Sally Nabil explains that with the blockage resolved and traffic resumed in both directions, the mood is considerably more cheery this morning.
Spirits here are pretty high. There is a sense of achievement. Everybody feels proud at the moment that navigation is back. The head of the Suez Canal Authority said that ships started crossing the canal already, and priority has been given to ships that have livestock on board. Authorities here felt a lot of pressure due to the blockage of the Suez Canal because they know perfectly well how it can impact global economy, and it already did, because oil prices, for example, have risen as a result of the suspension of navigation. Concerns were rising that there will be extensive delays of shipments. So at the moment, ships have already started crossing the waterway, and we know that the Ever Given is undergoing safety checks at the moment. It's being inspected by experts to assess the situation and see if any damage has been caused to the body of the ship. And after that, it might be free to go.
That's the BBC's Sally Nabil reporting from the Suez Canal there. Finally, your family bond isn't just the relationship between your loved ones. It's now a policy at Volvo. The Swedish carmaker has begun offering 24 weeks parental leave at 80% base pay for all workers who have been at the company at least a year. For comparison, the OECD in 2018 found, on average, across member countries, mothers were entitled to 90 days maternity leave with at least 50% earnings. In London, I'm Victoria Craig with the Marketplace Morning Report from the BBC World Service.
Hey there, I'm Bridget, co-host of Million Bazillion, Marketplace's podcast for kids about money. I want to tell you about our email newsletter course, Million Bazillion Academy. In this new and improved course, we'll help your kids learn about crypto, credit cards, and inflation in just 6 weeks. Each lesson comes with a podcast episode, a fun cartoon, discussion questions, and an activity that lets kids apply what they're learning in the real world. You can start at any time and work at your own pace. Sign up today at marketplace.org/academy.